Kelman on CliffCentral.com.
Right then, let's say what's happening to the squad. How are you, Mangi Mbeleni?
Very well, thank you. I'm energized. It's a new week.
Yeah, your t-shirt says, rhythm is my bitch.
That's correct. I used to throw parties in Cape Town, and I was a partner in an events thing.
That was called Rhythm is My Bitch?
That's the one.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
See, that's just made you cooler. Like, now you've become one of those people who used to, like, throw parties and promote parties. It's very something like out of a series. It's cool.
Yeah, something I get.
Okay, there you go. See, he's brushing it off. Vaughn, you're also in this business of promoting parties and doing a million and one different things. How are you, Mr. Thiel?
I feel like a rose today, bro. I don't know about you guys.
I
don't know who's a thorn in this room. No, I'm good, bro, man. Yeah, I'm just a bit tired. It was a bit of a hectic weekend.
You were in Swaziland.
Yeah, we're in Swaziland, bro. It was crazy.
What were you doing in Swaziland?
We got booked out there. Shane was gigging. So I was DJing for him out there, and we were just traveling a bit and had a look at, you know, it was pretty cool. We went to the huts and we saw the culture, learned about the Swati culture. That was crazy.
Very cool.
Some really interesting beliefs.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Today's Gentleman's Roundtable is taking the spotlight and putting the spotlight on something that I came across this morning on social media. But when I saw it, I was actually surprised that we haven't had this kind of we probably have had this conversation many times, but certainly it doesn't feel like this conversation has been given the space that it perhaps needs in a South African context.
Yep.
It was just a couple of weeks ago, we were interviewing Lindiwe Ngobeni, who's the head girl at Roosevelt High School. And we were speaking to her about, like, what are the things that are wrong with South African schools? And she brought up the fact that the hair policies in South African schools are ridiculous when it comes to natural hair. And so when she said it, I kind of thought, like, wow, I'm surprised that this hasn't been a bigger thing. So I wasn't surprised this morning when I woke up and I saw it. So there's a hell of a lot going on. If you haven't seen it, the hashtag is Stop Racism Pretoria Girls High. This is after a young lady at the school who's 13 years old was put into detention. On numerous occasions, she's been put into detention for her hair, which is a big afro. Says, yeah, big afro. Now that social media has gotten a hold of it, perhaps this conversation is going to get the talkability that it deserves and things are going to happen. So much has happened since this. I was just reading on BBC News, who've picked up on the story, that there are now numerous allegations coming out at the school. There's loads of other schools that are weighing in on the conversation. So this is an example of one person's story sparking a national narrative. Of course, it is important that we speak about this, but I mean, three guys sitting around the table speaking about hair may not always, I don't know. I mean, if we got Chris Rock here, maybe it would have been something to write home about. But we thought that we should bring in people who are passionate about this and really want to play an active role in this narrative. And Shmangs, you suggested two phenomenal women who are sitting with us here today. Two of these amazing women with us.
Well, I think both are very well versed, I suppose, in the subject. Beyond hair, just I think in terms of, like, gender, I don't know what Lesego particularly with, like, gender issues and sort of that cultural identity. And a friend of mine, Sunny Faba, has actually suggested our other guest today. She's done great research into the subject, and obviously someone then who is more than qualified to weigh in on this, but not, you know, not just on, like, opinions, but also, like, actual facts and based on research.
Absolutely. Yeah. So hanging out with us today are Fatani and Lesego. Lesego is a freelance scriptwriter, outspoken, opinionated. What else? Because this is your bio over here.
Okay. So, I mean, I've never done a bio before. It's actually bizarre. Like, hi, I'm Lesego. I'm 27. I like walks on the beach. I don't know. Yeah, so I'm a freelance scriptwriter. I'm about to be a part-time student again.
Cool.
Which, all right. But I'm very vocal on especially Twitter, Facebook, about feminine issues feminism issues, and especially misogynoir, which is a specific brand of feminism that speaks to black women, because it's a different kind altogether.
Yeah.
So I think that's where I know he said, you know, Fatani does the research part, and so she's supposed to be the smart one. I'm just the loud one, but, you know, I think it's a combination that works
it's
well
together.
It's a good
combo.
Yeah.
Fatani, you are incredibly impressive. You're an economist. You have a master's degree in development theory and policy. Yes. That's from WITS. It just goes
so
on and on.
Biography, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm an economist by day, so I work for the chief economist of the Department of Trade and Industry.
Wow.
Shout out to him for letting me come here.
Yeah, I was about to say.
He is a progressive revolutionary for even saying, okay, girl, you can go and do the politics of hair. But I've been doing I've mixed hair products. I have a platform called Mixes in the Kitchen, a natural hair's journey. Thousands of women have been learning how to mix products for natural hair. If you've had an afro before, you know that there haven't been as many products dedicated to our hair type. So to liberalize us from this constant insecurity over not having the market have products for us, I've said, you know what? Look into your kitchen. And there's obviously something there that your grandmother, your mother, or even yourself can use for your hair. So that's been my story. It's the freedom of having to appreciate and grow your natural hair. And yeah, I've done that for over six years. And that's why I'm here. I understand the politics. I understand going to work and saying, oh my goodness, my hair doesn't look neat enough, as it is with what's going on in Pretoria Girls, is just having to, while you identify yourself as an African and what grows out naturally from your scalp, and having to go into spaces that don't necessarily accept it as it is. So that's been my story.
The short bio.
A very short bio.
Summarized. It goes on for pages.
Yeah.
So I think to kick this off, I mean, I remember in school, it was like you had to wear the winter uniform in winter and the summer uniform in summer. And they used to say to you, make sure that it's the shorts in the summer and then it's the longer trousers in the winter and everything.
Yeah.
And that honestly was about the extent of what they told me to do. Obviously, I think, like in high school, if you started growing a bit of a beard, they were like, you need to trim that back.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like, I don't remember at any point having a hard and fast rule or something that sort of spoke directly to a natural aspect of myself and said, well, you need to change that. Mm-hmm. So really, this is not an issue that I've been massively exposed to. I think it's crazy to me that this is even the case, but it is the case. And was this the case when you were at school? This has consistently been across the board. This is what's been happening.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, the thing is, that's why today is like a trending topic as it is, because everybody can identify with this. Every black person. And for me, it wasn't actually something that I saw with girls first. I mean, at the school that I went to for primary school, I saw boys not allowed to grow their hair past a certain length in terms of afro or dreads. And I mean, even there's a WhatsApp that's making rounds now on Twitter that's like, you know, there's this guy whose father has been told to shave his hair because it's not neat enough. And he told the teacher, you know, I've been to your school many times. Many black white boys have long hair or, you know, hair that's past the length of my son's. It's actually a natural black problem that you're making it, not a length problem. So, and we have experienced long before, but I think as part of the first group of black people at these schools, we were too nervous to make our voices heard because, you know, being kicked out of school is a real possibility, especially when you feel like, well, teachers make you feel like you should be lucky to be there in the first place. So it's not something that's new now. It's just, I mean, even people who are as young as 13, like I think that was a 2000s baby, to be able to do this just means that they don't want it to have to continue for years to come. It's not new. It's just now making the rounds. I suppose also with social media being as big as it is, now we're able to have photos and conversations that are immediate, whereas before it would be behind closed doors where we'd all go and, oh my God, did you hear? I have to cut my hair, or my hair's brown. I have to dye it back to black, even though, you know, there's a Becky who's blonde but was brunette last summer. Do you know what I mean? So these rules only apply to black students, which is why you wouldn't have heard about them, for instance. They don't apply to you.
Yeah, I agree with Lesejo. It's basically the politics of assimilation. I mean, white Caucasians don't necessarily have to assimilate that much into being structurally correct in very Model C schools. Mm. They haven't had to change their hair or, you know, look neater or speak English eloquently. It wasn't something that they had to really face. And, you know, black children have had to come from different backgrounds, different understanding of being black, and have had to face coming into this environment where the government says push black students into former Model C schools, but they have to assimilate so much to them that they kind of have this identity battle that you don't necessarily would think a 13-year-old or a 14-year-old should have, because they should be rebels and do silly things and experiment, but they essentially do. And it comes from kind of not dealing with the racial question at its very institutional level. Like, how does the workplace deal with being black and being African? How does schools treat being black and being African, even though we agree that we're democratic and race shouldn't be an issue? But how do we accept that we have an identity which we should bring to the table, and that includes having an afro?
I mean, even when you Google like professional hairstyles versus unprofessional, it's widely known that unprofessional hairstyles is dreadlocks, is afro.
This is globally on Google.
Right now, the images that come up are definitely very black hairstyles, natural hairstyles. Professional hairstyles are, you know, white girls, just pictures of white girls.
Yeah. There's something that interesting. Like I fully agree with you guys, man. Like I something like growing up, you don't notice, you know, especially being a white male or whatever the case is. But I remember myself being in school and being, I was suspended my last 2 weeks of matric because of consistently being not neat enough. My hair, my beard, you know, the regular stupid things I think schools all need to abolish, you know, I find it ridiculous. But nonetheless, like I as much as I completely agree with you, I think my direct experience is making it a little bit hard for me to fully understand it, because where I come from, and well, my little specific once in a lifetime sort of scenario, I experienced it, you know, being a white male, being very I was, how do I say it? I don't want to say discriminate, it's not the word, because it's completely untrue, but I got into a lot of trouble. I mean, they would walk with a ruler, you know, and they would, like, if my hair touched my ear, they would, you know, call my mother and kick me out of school and whatever the case. So, I'm just trying to figure out here whether, absolutely, I think every single system is always more, as much as I think the whole system of schooling, the whole idea of your hair must be a certain way for you to be accepted into a school or into a neat, have a neat look or whatever the case, I feel like that needs to change on its own completely. However, I do feel that that system does sort of not favor black people at all, and I think they do get the harsher end of the stick than a white person does. Like all of the systems in our country, like all systems in general in the world at the moment, right? But how much of this do you think is a greater problem, like I'm saying now, like a full-on system, which is kind of like limiting to any young person, black or white, trying to express themselves and be who they are? Do you think it should change on that level and just abolish the whole entire idea of having to have your hair a certain length, short back and sides? You can't have it gelled up. We couldn't have gel. We couldn't have, you know, these types of things. Like, even, like, I would never understand it. You know, I would never, ever understand it. I once got cornrows in my head, and I was told I had to take them out because it's not, you know what I mean? And these type of things just never really made sense to me at all in general. So I'm just thinking, do you guys think that it's maybe just it's a systematic problem that, you know, even though it is now, it has sort of become a race thing, because like in South Africa, it always is, you know, and like we try to pretend race is not a thing, but it really does affect, you know, it is. Do you think that we should revolutionize the way schools just operate in general with these type of things?
I do want to speak about like the whole system and how it, you know, every single child. But right now, for me, the reason why it's a race issue is because the hair thing is just a microcosm of everything else that's going on. There wasn't just one isolated incident to do with hair at the school. And this girl's afro, by the way, it's the most beautiful afro in the world. I'm so jealous.
So it's because it wasn't, sorry, I'm not 100% on top of the story, but I get the gist of it. So it's because she had an afro, they told her that she needs to cut her hair. She can't write to exams.
Make it neat. Yeah.
But you see, it's a pathetic. That's a pathetic idea. Like, for me, that is pathetic.
Exactly.
It's pathetic on all levels. You know, absolutely all levels. But I'm even just thinking of how does a school run like that?
Exactly.
How is that even
now,
a rule?
That's the nice thing is that now it's opened up all these other conversations. So it's not just the fact that this Afro thing is the problem. The reason why there's a whole march, a whole protest, University of Pretoria students getting involved, is because it's also the language that they use to speak to black people at these schools. Because honestly, if you are now, there's a group of five of you chilling, having fun after school or at break time, all of a sudden people are, or teachers are asking you why you are, you know, sort of, what are you planning? What is this meeting about? And it's like, it's about 5 13-year-olds catching up on the weekend. There's always something. And then even with, I mean, I remember I went to another school to go play tennis, and the white teacher was calling all the little black kids skibenga, which was like a weird Fanagalo word for iskebengu, which is a criminal. So she was like, oh, come here, my little skebenga. And it sounded like a term of endearment due to, you know, the little and tone of voice. But she was only referring to the black kids as that. And so how do you grow up also, even though you know your teacher liked you,
that's ridiculous,
but she's only calling the little black kids these.
Absolutely. I experienced this, like, now that I think back, because I used to go, I was the school that I was referring to when I got in so much trouble was I was in a Christian school. So just imagine, right? You can imagine like a Christian school in the 90s and the early 2000s. Like, that's ridiculous. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, that's where I went to primary school. And when I went to high school, I went to a very free school. We were at a sports academy. So there I was very submerged into like a culture where I was one of the only white people in my sports discipline as a footballer. I lived with, you know, African guys, and I learned and I got to understand like on another level, right? And then the school would also allow us to be a little bit more free. So, you know, because it was a sports school, guys would have hairstyles and guys would be a certain way, right? And I could see the difference in how, you know, people get along when things are like that. Mm. It's when the systems start like telling you how to behave and start dictating to you as a young person that this is neat and this is not. And this
but
is
especially
this and this
something
is
that's
that.
Natural. Because for you, you complained about gel, and gel is not natural. Mm. And afro grows out of my head this way.
Yeah,
this
absolutely.
This is what it looks like when I wake up in the morning. So I understand that gel is not a thing. It might be a girl.
No, that's true. That's
they're
true.
They're still minors at the same time. I think that's what people miss. They're not students from universities or minors. They still under their, you know, the parenting of their parents are still involved. They still have the legal right to say yes or no. So I think we should still give the power to the governing body to say, you guys are responsible for keeping rules and conduct the way they are. These children do not have any say on governing body meetings. They don't get to attend. They get to say, this is what we've discussed every single year is what's the code of conduct. So we shouldn't negate the parents from saying, okay, these are the rules. Your kids go there, you check them every morning, you wash their uniform every other day, and you say, this is my kid's hairstyle, I comb it every single day. The kid
but once you drop
stay.
The kid off at school, the kid is the one who has to face the suspension, the exclusion.
No, but the legal right still remains with the parent. The parent can say, I pull out their child, I pay the school fees. The child has no power, technically, given the system. The child is just...
I just want to throw in here, because obviously this conversation has kind of progressed throughout the day as well. And when it comes to this conversation, and I'm glad that Vaughn's had a very strong opinion on it, because it makes what we're about to speak about more relevant and more sort of within the context, is that who actually is sort of enabled or has the right to comment on this? One of the big stories emerging today is what happened on John Robbie's show on 702 this morning, where somebody phoned in and said that John Robbie actually, as a white male, shouldn't be commenting on anything to do with black women and their hair. He disagreed, and so that whole conversation's ensued as well. And so before it's even like asking Mangi for comment or whatever, as black women, the people that this is about, when it comes to people speaking about it, and you've seen what's happened on social media today, where do you sit with the conversation that's being had?
Yeah, I think...
And who's having it?
I prefer people, you know, white people or black males to be more facilitators of conversation and to be more open to listening than to being the people who have this strong opinion on whether or not it should be a rule or we should change it. I don't mind people listening in. But I mean, I also had a black person on Twitter that I follow, a male, who tweeted, you know, this is why people who have weaves and relaxers shouldn't get involved in this conversation. And for me, that's still policing. They just don't get that it's policing in another way. Now, all of a sudden, if you want to have extensions or you want to straighten your hair, you can't get involved in this conversation, which is not a which is not something that people should be able to say, which is why I'm like, if you're a black male or a white person, you actually just don't understand where we come from. Black women's hair is very political. It's very much part of our identity. It's very much a part of our conversations, and all of these sorts of things are who you are, essentially, and who you choose to tell the world you are. So by us being policed by, if it's white people or black males, it just is, for me, not okay to get involved in that way. If you're trying to listen and sort of get involved in terms of a learning aspect, then I'm fully aware, or I'm fully inviting to people to be able to get involved.
I think for me, one of the biggest problems, and this is what a discussion I had in one of my WhatsApp groups, is that I know for socioeconomic reasons, or for maybe for historical reasons, we haven't been part of the conversation. And I'm talking about black people now at these schools. We haven't, you know, we're not part of. If you look at Girls High, I'm sure the teaching staff complement is almost white. And they can keep it that way because they've got, you know, obviously a big donor, a group, you know, like old girls who donate a lot of money to the schools, and therefore they don't actually rely on the government to pay the teachers.
Yeah.
Within the government, you know, the governing body, the school governing body itself, the makeup of it, I'd be surprised if there were more than two black people in that, you know, and that's a huge school. That's a school of like almost like I think 1,000 or 1,200 girls, and most of the student body itself is white. So part of the problem, you know, if I trace it back to when I was in high school, and I challenged, I went back after holidays one time when I saw my friends and students, they had cornrows, and it was completely fine. So when I went back to school and they were like, whoa, what's going on? What is this? I went back to the rule book and I said, you know, if you look here, my hair's not touching my ears, this and this. Obviously, I was trying to, you know, I was being ridiculous.
You actually weren't.
Yeah, but I mean, the point, I was just to drive the point home. But right then and there, they were too scared to challenge that because I was like, well, what are you actually saying right now? So obviously, they were too scared to challenge this issue because they don't want to be seen to be racist. But what needs to happen is that I challenged the housemaster and I said, we can take it to the deputy headmaster and the headmaster. What we need to do here is have a conversation with the black boys at the school, and we can come to an agreement as to what is suitable, not based on a book, a rule book that
written
was made
in 1880,
you know what I mean,
by a white guy.
And that was so that was just black guys, so we managed to fight that and we could have cornrows, which was great. I don't even want to talk about the black girls because they faced another beast altogether. And you can't fight this, I think, as one student body. It needs to, you know what I mean?
Be a collective.
The black girls need to sit with whoever, the school leadership, and say, guys, these are our issues, and this is how we address them. And then they need to change that. It's not like in 2016, a school needs to be progressive. You can't be scared to be seen to be either racist or whatever because in the rule book, it says, black girls, these are the hairstyles that you're allowed. White girls, these are the hairstyles that you're allowed.
And the thing is, like, okay, if you're a black girl and you're compliant with these rules, you actually get rewarded with prefectship, if that's a word. So we were actually talking today that if you're a black girl and you have an afro and you're a bit opinionated or you're loud, you're never going to be a prefect. So the school always rewards this compliance and complacence of black girls with who straighten their hair, who talk a bit softer, who aren't so volatile or don't get involved in these political type of debates, who then get actual rewards of being prefect.
Absolutely. But the black girls right there, then surely.
But they're not the ones who are coming to make a political stand. They're not the ones who are going to get these conversations going.
For sure. But what I'm saying is that if it's agreed within the black, and I'm not talking about just prefects making the decisions and making the rules for the rest of the black girls, it needs to be every single black girl from standard six or however low the grade
common
goes, from standard six all the way to matric, and say, guys, you know, we all know we come from different backgrounds as black girls in itself, some from Kenya, some from Lesotho, some from, you know, just already that's it. Like, I can imagine someone coming from a different country, already they've got their own hairstyles. So we need to just come to a middle ground as black girls. What is suitable that we agree on and is need to presentable? I mean, I don't think that going, you know, I remember that hairstyle that Venus and Serena had. I think that's a bit wild. But
can I just throw in my idea? Yeah, is that my idea is this, right? This is what I think. Okay, I understand why this conversation boils down to this. And I understand your opinion on when you say there's no real space for a white person or a black guy to kind of join the conversation from the angle of fighting or almost like police the situation or say what if, you know, or ask we did, what about, you know. I get that and I completely understand that. I do think, however, and I don't know how you think about this, but I do think that there is a place for black men and white people to develop a consciousness of the reality, and once that is developed, take the fight to your own too, because, you know, I have this thing that I have this conversation with a couple of people, specifically feminists and a lot of different kinds of people, because I identify with feminism. I understand it, you know, and I support it. In fact, I'm feminist in a lot of my thinking. I've almost had like an epiphany over the last couple of years. And the conversations I have with people is that they tell me, because I'm a man, I don't have any place. I can't fight for feminism.
No, that's not what I said, Oswald.
But I'm glad you. So, but my point is that I think what has to happen in 2016, if first of all, is the first thing that needs to happen for me is that schools need to change. I have a very, very big problem with the way schools are run. Yeah. I think schools are limiting. I think they don't develop young people. I think that things like homework, I think things like school uniform, I think all these things that are
you're
are
just taking it to a whole...
Yeah, he's taking it to like...
No,
like,
no.
We're talking about structural racism.
No, but here I'm going with it. These things add to all of these problems. If we allow young people to just be your natural self, grow your hair as you please, you know, do all those things as you please, it does not remove the fact that young person can develop into anything they want to
be. But the problem with the structural racism and the hair thing is that it continues when you're an adult. You get policed like this at work. Yeah. So it's not just about, you know, it ends at Pretoria Girls High with your matric certificate, the way schools can be limiting, and then you are free to get tattoos, to gel your hair, to dye it pink. We still can go to work now and be told that the hair that grows out of my head as it is must be changed, otherwise it's not,
but
you
still
know,
and still psychologically, I mean, producer Kat was telling me earlier, this young woman who keeps getting put in detention, the teachers are saying to her, well, you can't have that hair because the kid behind you in class can't see the board.
It's a bird's nest.
And like, the thing is that you know, even if you went into, and again, like, you know, I can't even comment on this, but even if you went into corporate South Africa and corporate South Africa was do whatever you want with your hair,
right?
Like, when you're a kid, I remember when I was bullied on the playground, like, and that stuff sticks with you.
Yeah, that's
so if there's one place you got to get it right, like, just from a whatever perspective, it's when you're a kid, is like your formative years.
Yeah,
and if somebody shuts you down in your formative years, like, that's a problem.
How do we what is the solution?
I think the biggest problem is making kids fight structural racism while they're trying to figure out, okay, who am I?
Puberty.
You're trying to answer existential questions, like, and then someone says, well, no, you shouldn't be answering them right now. Maybe she'll answer them later. You know, or you get detention for, like, saying, I want to have my hair as an afro now. I mean, really, come now. Mm. Every other child is able to, like, cut their hair a little short, dye it a little red. But when you decide to have your afro out, then, oh, no, don't have that little existential who am I question
in
high school.
And then send dogs and policemen with guns to also fight 13-year-old girls. I mean,
exactly.
Did you see the size difference,
like,
what is happening other than them having a silent protest? Why do they need all of that?
What do we think the solution is? We identify the problem. How do we address it? How do you change that? How do we actually make that something that does not exist anymore?
I think Mangi, like, actually spoke about it a little bit, in that the board of directors being all white or the teachers being all white is where the problem is. For me, infiltrate with color the places that are in leadership. So those are the things that really make decisions. I mean, the board of directors and, you know,
governing
parents
body
at my schools that I went to had maybe one black parent.
Yeah, that's,
and I feel like that was more like, I don't want to even use that word, but like a tokenism. A little bit of like, look, we do have one.
Yeah.
But I think the real decisions made, I mean, really, even when you look at the magazines, they're like, no, we're still white. We got black people, but we don't want them to really be black. Mm. We want them to be as white as possible just so we can get the numbers or look like we're a fair school.
That's
so
true.
I think the infiltrating at the top is where the thing is. That's when those people who make decisions are going to be able to actually be effective.
There was an incredible call that I heard earlier on, on the radio. And it was an old girl from Pretoria Girls. Mm. And she matriculated, I think she said 2000, the year 2000. And she wasn't really shocked. Yeah. No, she wasn't shocked at all at what had happened. Mm. And she basically spoke to the fact that there's some serious, serious, serious structural, you know, structural racism within the school.
Mm.
So this is just one issue.
Yeah.
You know, the MEC for Education went there today and one of the girls said, we came the one time to school. I mean, these are girls that stay at hostel. So we came to school wearing black hoodies. You know, we're just wearing hoodies, a bunch of girls. And then they called extra security because they thought, well, these might be criminals. So, you know what I mean? These things speak to structural racism within these institutions. And I tend to find that these schools are so scared of dealing with this thing because they don't want to be seen in a particular light. They don't want to potentially lose the you know, huge donations from old girls because obviously the makeup of the school changes. Where I went to school in the Eastern Cape, a lot of the former Model C schools now, especially in small towns like King Williamstown and Queenstown and that, are largely made up now of black kids. And the standard of education hasn't dropped one bit at any of these schools.
Mm.
But what's happened is that they've changed, things have changed slowly. So little things like war cries, now we've included Xhosa war cries.
Mm.
Little things like that help you so much in changing and finding out and you realizing your identity. Mm. And I think that's what is important with this conversation is that, guys, why are we scared to talk about these damn things?
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
We should just be
Because like, at the top level, we're not protected. Mm. That's the thing. We can speak about these things and be the, you know, one person with the fist up, and then you get expelled, you know, and things like that that make you, when you're younger, really scared.
Mm. Yeah.
And because you're not protected, that's what I'm saying. If we do infiltrate it at the top, you do have people who will stand up for you at your, you know, expulsion hearing or whatever, who to say, this is not a thing. This is not a crime to say, I want my afro.
So we're going to do a part two of this, which means we're going to rework the show a little bit, but I don't want to like stop this conversation in the middle of its tracks, because it is an important conversation, and actually only now, sort of 20 minutes into it, are we figuring out the different narratives and offshoots and actually having important conversation.
Kelman on CliffCentral.com.